IT Life, the show for you, the IT pro, the technologist, the futurist, and the maker. Every week, we bring you topics that are most important to your life, your IT life. This week, we're talking crowdfunding. No, we're not promoting an IT Life Kickstarter. We're talking about how crowdfunding has evolved from Kickstarter and Indiegogo to something even enterprises are paying attention to. And we'll talk about what that means for IT departments. To do that, we've got a great guest. He is Chris Tsai. Chris is co-founder and CEO of Celery, a pre-order platform for launching new products. Chris studied quantitative marketing at Wharton, computer science at MIT, and built his first Pascal program when he was 12. The son of a serial entrepreneur, he has been working on tech and social finance startups since college. And before creating Celery, he led Groupon's expansion in Asia. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks, David. Good to be here.
Good. Well, I'm glad to have you here. So, Chris, we had a conversation just a while ago that I really enjoyed, and I basically want to try to repeat that conversation for our guests because I had a really good time. And I think where we started last time was just me asking you, you know, what's new in crowdfunding? What are you seeing that's changed over the last couple of months or a year?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. We've been doing crowdfunding or pre-orders or the thing that we do for the last 3 years, and things have changed quite a bit. So I think maybe the most notable event, which we think really put crowdfunding platforms like Kickstarter on the map, was when Pebble raised their giant $10 million crowdfunding campaign in 2012. So we were at that time just finishing Y Combinator, and we ended up speaking with the CEO, Eric, who was having a lot of trouble after that giant crowdfunding campaign figuring out what to do next, specifically with tens of thousands of backers and way more demand than he knew what to do with. And his production schedule pushed out to maybe 16 months away from what he originally thought it would be. How to solve that problem. So just a quick background on what we do is we're a pre-order platform that enables businesses like a Pebble all the way up to larger companies like a Timex or Disney to take pre-orders for new products. And so what's changed since then, that Kickstarter campaign by Pebble is crowdfunding has evolved quite a bit, where it's not just startups and entrepreneurs that want to do crowdfunding. It's, you know, interesting businesses that sell physical or hard goods, and even retail businesses that are trying to figure out where to set up a new storefront. They'll all use crowdfunding and or pre-orders to de-risk their business.
So that's interesting. So what I'm hearing you say is that crowdfunding was so successful, it had to grow up, basically, that it wasn't really prepared for its success. But in the process of growing up, we're seeing big companies like Disney join crowdfunding. Why would a company like Disney be interested in crowdfunding? Don't they have their own pipeline of creating goods and services for their clients?
Yeah, so the thing with Disney is there's a division we work with called Maker Studios. They work with a bunch of really popular YouTube stars. One in particular is the number one YouTube star today is this guy named PewDiePie, or at least that's his YouTube handle. I think the last count was something over 32 million followers, but he has a merchandise business, and Maker Studios, which runs the merchandise business for PewDiePie, has manufacturers in China that need to produce, you know, the backpacks, the swag, the t-shirts, etc., that PewDiePie sells. But the factory has a minimum order quantity of something like 10,000 units. And so it makes a lot more sense to capture the customer demand from PewDiePie's followers of any back-to-school backpack or t-shirt, for example, and know how many units to produce before they produce it. So it ends up reducing their inventory risk significantly, their cash flow, or their upfront investment before they have to go through the effort of producing, right? So that's one of the main reasons a company like Disney would use crowdfunding and pre-orders.
Right. So what this is really doing in a lot of ways is changing traditional order that manufacturers of products, create products. I mean, it used to be that they would design and build and then sell. And now it sounds to me like at least for a product launch, they're designing and selling and then building. Is that a fair way of talking about that?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the economics just make way more sense if you do it in that order. And there's a number of telltale examples when companies haven't done that, but over-invested in some kind of inventory or product that they expected would sell. And if it doesn't, if the market doesn't want that thing that you made, then you're sitting on this giant pile of unsellable inventory. So for the early adopters, like the hardware startups, if you're in the Silicon Valley, they almost have to do it that way because they're trying to, everything that they're doing is some way of de-risking their ongoing business. But I think the smarter brands and the larger, more innovative companies that have innovation departments are realizing that it makes a lot of sense for them to get in the game and do it this way too.
Right. I get that it takes away some risk because obviously you build, 10,000 units of something and you sell two, you've got all this cost, 9,998 units that you didn't sell, right? I get that. But isn't there a new risk associated with that in the sense that you are trying to break into a market which is traditionally very social, very viral, very anti-corporate? Are we seeing crowdfunding changing? Is it less grassroots? Are we seeing more people getting into it? Is it more corporate, essentially?
Yeah, that's fascinating. So you're totally right that part of the magic of a Kickstarter campaign is this independent spirit, right? Like you as a Kickstarter backer, you get to feel like almost like an angel customer, if you will, like an angel investor, but you're really wanting this new thing that this guy who's more of an underdog doesn't have the funds to produce, so you really want that thing to exist in the world. I think what brands are realizing is very aware that it's hard to represent themselves like an independent company that doesn't have funding. They still want a way to capture that magic of this kind of co-creator spirit, right, of customers, bottle up that customer engagement and put it on their own website. So we've seen a lot of companies want to go the white label crowdfunding route, where they take components of, this authentic message, where, hey, we're this new thing that is an experiment and we want to use our early backer or the customer to get involved. I think companies are still playing with how to walk that line. But what's also really interesting is you have folks like an Amazon or an eBay or even newly public company Etsy who are seeing this maturation, the crowdfunding industry, are really getting involved, right? So Amazon just recently launched this new startup platform called Amazon Launchpad. And good 20 to 30% of the products that, we've helped with pre-sales are now listed on Amazon Launchpad. And I can only imagine that more and more businesses will want to participate in that program, or even folks that are selling regularly through Amazon will do product development and product launching this way.
Right. Well, tell me a little bit more about Launchpad. I have to say I'm not familiar with it. Does it essentially work much like the way they've been doing with independent booksellers or book writers, where you put a product online and then Amazon takes a cut as you sell it, or do they have a different business model for that?
So we're in the middle of talking with them about how to be supportive. It's, I think, as I understand it from the third-party platform perspective, their desire to get a little closer to the startup and new product ecosystem. And so there's a standard marketplace listing fee, if you will, just like their regular Amazon marketplace. But there's other services that they'll offer around things like getting your product reviewed by folks before it gets listed. And there's other initiatives I'm sure they're thinking through on how it represents a better product pipeline for them, and also a new set of revenues for them. I don't know the model directly, but
sure.
it's definitely created a bit of a stir in the crowdfunding world. With Amazon partnering directly with folks like Indiegogo. So there's an entire section around here products funded by Indiegogo now on Amazon, et cetera.
Right. So here you have this extremely large player in technology, specifically in the cloud, getting into something that's been fairly grassroots up to that point. That's very interesting. So tell me something here. I like this system. I see how it makes sense even for larger companies to do. But one thing I'm having difficulty understanding is, what is the difference between, say, taking pre-orders on a product and actually doing, you know, crowdfunding? In a way, it seems like we're kind of blurring the lines there a little bit.
Yeah, that's a really important distinction, because crowdfunding platforms like Kickstarter or Indiegogo, you're really contributing to a project. You're not necessarily buying anything. It just so happens that when you back a campaign and you're contributing to it, you may get a perk or the thing that they're making, for example. But it's not necessarily classified as a purchase. When you're doing a pre-order through a system like ours, that in fact is a commercial transaction. And so that tends to be the bigger difference between the two. People conflate the two concepts all the time because they look very, very similar to a buyer. Like, you're paying for something that may not show up for another couple months, right? But to the merchant or the person selling or to the business, there's a lot of material differences to think through. Maybe the biggest of which is, how long are you comfortable letting a consumer wait before you ship? Because then if you wait too long, you expose yourself to the risk of chargebacks or refunds. And the other is, when do you capture the funds for the crowdfunding campaign or pre-order? Crowdfunding, typically, it's a 30-day window where you capture all the funds, and then you have whatever promised date of delivery thereafter. Pre-orders, the most technical definition of what's allowed is, you have to ship your products within 30 to 60 days of when you capture the funds. So most companies will do pre-orders. Well, they may capture payment information. They may not charge for the pre-order until within 30 to 60 days of shipping. So a lot of detail there, but the distinction is important, even though they seem very
right. Well,
close
no, you're,
in concept.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The distinction is very important. So I want to get into that in a little more detail for our listeners. From the point of view of, let's say their enterprise wants to get into the crowdfunding or the pre-order business, is it just the same as a regular e-commerce platform? I just take the money, I attach it to a SKU, and eventually I ship out the product? Or is it a different concept from a technological point of view?
Yeah, it's quite different. So most businesses that are selling things online have an e-commerce platform, which assumes that you have inventory or items in stock that you'll be shipping as soon as someone buys. When you're selling something for pre-order, so in the case of, so we're working with a company that sells Star Trek communicator devices, and they were at Comic-Con in San Diego, and they already have a home-built e-commerce platform, but in order to enable the pre-sales of this Star Trek original series Bluetooth-enabled communicator device, they used our system, which is built for this non-inventory use case, which all it means is, when you capture, you know, they installed a very quick embeddable form to capture the payments for the pre-order, and we provide a dashboard that lets them manage the pre-orders. But the important distinction from the regular e-commerce platform is, all the interactions around making that customer wait for some period of time, notifying them when it's available, letting them make changes to their order while they're waiting. Like, if they pick the green versus the blue one, they can change their minds. If they moved and changed addresses, they can update that address. All those non-inventory ways of buying things is a wholly different paradigm than when you have that product in stock. Technology-wise, you can have an e-commerce platform, but you'll still need a pre-order platform or mechanism like ours to facilitate that correctly.
Right. And do you even need to go farther if you're going to get into a crowdfunding situation where you may never even finish the product? I mean, obviously, you hope you do. But some mechanism for refunds or handling the reality of not finishing. I mean, obviously, different crowdfunding agreements are different, right? Some say, you know, if we don't make it, you're out of luck. Some are, you know, we'll refund you. Do you need to go even farther if you're going to get into crowdfunding versus pre-orders?
Yes and no. So to the buyer, like I mentioned, it looks very similar. If you want to make it really explicit to the buyer, you know, sometimes folks will add, if they're doing it on their own website, in this case, right, not on a Kickstarter or a Indiegogo platform, they'll add that little progress bar that is very common, that, you know, if you don't hit 1,000 units, it won't happen, right? And you make it really clear before they back the campaign or they purchase the pre-order, this will happen if we don't reach that campaign goal. And our system, or if you choose to build it yourself, you have to have at least some mechanism to do the cancellation of the orders and the notification. So it, from a technology point of view, is solved now. But yeah, there's most of it is around solving for the correct experience you're providing to those pre-order or backer customers.
Right, because obviously, even more so than a traditional buying relationship, your relationship with your backers in a crowdfunding situation is vital, right? What are some best practices for trying to maintain that relationship with backers? Are there ways of communicating that are more successful? Any other kinds of technological or social media ways that make a lot of sense to communicate with backers?
Yeah, so there's a couple different ways at different sequences of a campaign or an ongoing pre-order that really matter, right? The first is right before the campaign. Most companies or very ambitious campaigners are building a huge list of emails that they're going to market to or ask to support their campaign. So on the order of thousands to hundreds of thousands of emails, mostly so that when you initially launch this product or whatever it is you're crowdfunding, the first day you get as big a pop as possible. As most people, for the sake of press and potentially if you're looking to raise money from investors for investor traction, you want to, you know, start off with a huge bang. Over time, there's this interesting kind of bimodal distribution where you have this huge pop in the very beginning, and then if you run a crowdfunding campaign that's limited, say 30 days in duration, near the end of the campaign, there's yet another like resurgence of excitement. So all the social media communication updates during the campaign are extremely vital. There's a whole cottage industry of people that will help you with that, from PR agencies, digital marketing agencies, to videographers, et cetera, et cetera. That's if you're a startup. If you're a larger organization, like a Timex, they launched the Iron Man Timex collection through us. Similar process, much more corporate-y in the sense that they had their communications team managing the press releases, the social media process. They had a bunch of tools in the background, making sure that the timing of the tweets and the Facebook posts all made sense. And then I think the last section of that would be post-campaign. The most important thing is just transparency and communication, which all feed into this authentic feeling that you care about these early supporters of whatever thing or product you've launched, and you're keeping them apprised of your progress, right? So those are usually the best practices, because if you don't do those things and you end up running into delays, as is very typical with crowdfunding campaigns in general, then backers start to suspect that either you're not legitimate, you can't get this thing out in time. So anyway, communication is extremely, extremely vital. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Right. Is it fair to say that another reason you want that early pop is because most crowdfunding platforms these days have some sort of way of surfacing products, and a lot of those products, a lot of the ways of surfacing them are how close they are to funded, how much money they've gotten, et cetera. Is that another reason why you want that early pop?
Yeah, if you are on a Kickstarter or Indiegogo platform, that early momentum certainly matters, because you want to get either a staff pick from Kickstarter, or Indiegogo has an equivalent mechanism to showcase ones that have momentum or products that are trending. But I think even more importantly, if you're running a self-hosted campaign on Celery, or you're just trying to get your own traction. So the biggest distinction, right, is you may be launching a product on a crowdfunding platform. If you're doing the white label or self-hosted route, you're really launching a business or brand. And that's one of the main reasons to do it. So all that early pop and momentum is the, you know, the big bang you want to create a lot of buzz and awareness about your brand. Or if you're an existing brand, the way to show the world, hey, look, we're new, we're hip, we're innovative, we've got this new cool thing that we're doing, you should really pay attention to us. So it's because otherwise, if you're launching into a bit of a vacuum without a lot of initial buzz, it, you know, nobody wants to launch something that doesn't go anywhere. So it's mostly solving for that psychological effect.
Right. In fact, it sounds like it's probably even more important if it's not on a platform, because people may never even see it. So let's about that for a minute, because I actually have to say, I don't have very much experience with the idea of launching a product that, in a crowdfunding way, that isn't on a crowdfunding platform. So what are the key differences if you're going to, if you're going to launch something yourself, if you're going to self-host crowdfunding, how does that work, and what do you need in place before you're going to do that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So this is a conversation we have all the time with CEOs of companies, or heads of marketing, or the CIO of a company, who are trying to figure out this way to capture the awesomeness of a crowdfunding campaign, but do it in a branded or white label way. And the biggest reason to do it is around this concept of controlling your message or controlling your brand. Because that's oftentimes the thing that's hardest to do when you have the template style page of a Kickstarter or Indiegogo platform, for example, and they have the guide rails set up for you. So for a Celery campaign, for example, you can customize it to your heart's content. It's just hosted on your own website. And what I think matters the most is once you figured out the way you want to, you know, position and explain the product launch or the campaign itself, is to think very carefully about, you know, what the objectives really are. So if it's just about maximizing the total dollars raised, there's definitely like a tried and true approach. If it's more of a marketing play to like get people aware that you're doing new things, there's a slightly different approach. Right. So if you're solving for maximum hyper maximum dollars, usually it's some combination of the two. And the important thing to think about for brands usually, or more mature businesses, is how to do tracking and analytics, right? Because that's one thing that's very difficult to do when you're not running it on your own domain, right? If you are sending a bunch of Facebook ad dollars to like a Kickstarter.com campaign page, you quickly lose track of, well, what's every part of that conversion funnel doing for like my Facebook ads or for my retargeted ads from this other platform I'm using. So what we found is when you're doing a self-hosted campaign where you can see all that rich data and analytics to track every step of that conversion funnel, it just makes tons and tons more sense. So anyway, the biggest distinction, again, to summarize, is brand control and tracking and conversion analytics.
Right. Well, that analytics obviously is the word these days. I mean, I don't think a business wants to do anything they can't measure anymore. But do you think we're going to see Kickstarter and Indiegogo, maybe Amazon, start to respond to that reality a little bit more, maybe open up their analytics a little more for people? Or do you think they're just a different product and they're aiming at a different group of people who don't necessarily need those analytics?
Yeah, it's. I think they're definitely trying. I think every software or marketplace platform recognizes the need to provide rich data to their sellers to know how to sell better. But they're fundamentally architected in a different way, right? So you can use both, for example, and many people will sell their crowdfund or pre-sale products through Sellery and also list on Amazon. It's just a separate channel that you can have your product receive that traffic that's native to that platform in. For a Sellery, for example, and anyone that's trying to do pre-sales or crowdfunding on their own domain, it does seem like it's important to prioritize your understanding, your learnings, and your analytics around like what you were able to capture as far as customers on your own. Because as much as a lot of these brands want to successfully go after different channels, I think the most important lessons will come from the food that they've hunted on their own, right? So most folks, most marketing departments, most IT organizations that we work with have found the most effective use of their marketing dollars and most effective use of their campaign resources is driving traffic straight to their own site for reasons of like link building and SEO, et cetera, et cetera. Once you rely too much on other retailers, other channels, you're losing margin because usually there's a large take rate if you sell to an Amazon. Most people want to have that direct relationship with their customer.
Okay, that makes sense. Unfortunately, we're getting close to the end of our time. We have about 5 minutes left. Usually what we like to do near the end of a show is to try to get to some practical ways of thinking about doing this. Let's say I'm an enterprise that's never gotten our feet wet in crowdfunding, but this is sounding interesting. Where do we start? I assume that it is picking the right kind of product for trying this. Is that a fair way to think about it? Is that the place to start? And if so, what kind of product should we be thinking about?
Yeah, that's really interesting. Most larger organizations or businesses that want to get their feet wet have like a skunk works department, right? Or like a way that they're always testing new innovative things. So usually if there's a product like that, that's a safe place to start. So exactly to your point of pick the right product to see if this model even works for you. After you've done that, and you've created the right amount of resources that you want to assign to this effort, then it's a question of like, what are the objectives? Are you trying to maximize the amount of dollars raised, or are you trying to maximize some kind of awareness or PR effect for broader initiatives in the organization? And then lastly, pick the platform that really supports those ends. Right. We're obviously a little biased because we think our platform is flexible enough to both help you maximize your dollars and achieve the marketing engagement you want. And along with that is because our platform is not only designed for pre-sales, if you want to continue selling in the non-inventory scenario or when you do have stock, you can continue selling through our system. Whatever the consideration you have for this campaign, you're able to accomplish based on the initial plan. So maybe better put, if you're trying to decide what to do, there's at least a 3-month period of time where you're probably scoping out what the objectives are, whether you're trying to raise a lot of money or just trying to get a lot of press. Obviously, we're as a platform very happy to help folks think through that process. So you can always reach us. Our website's trycelery.com, and we have a team of experts that can support this. But usually the tactical things will drive down to like what the ultimate objective of the campaign are.
Right. Makes sense. So let me ask you, you mentioned marketing, obviously, which is extremely important. Do I need to think about retooling my marketing department for certain skills if crowdfunding is going to become a larger part of my business? Do I need different kinds of people, different mindsets, different talents to pull this off?
Yes and no. So if you already have an IT department that is, you know, managing your website, that's consumer facing, largely from a technology side, you've got everything covered. The outside help or the skilling you'll need is really dependent on how aggressive you want to be with, like if you're fairly confident that you can generate a lot of buzz on your own, you already have built-in traffic to your domain, you may or may not need to hire like a PR-focused agency or a crowdfunding PR agency or a crowdfunding-focused marketing team, because there are many of those. So I think most of the campaigns that we've seen, who are the larger customers or the larger enterprises, they'll tend to do, they already have a set of partners that will do the promotion for them. So from that point of view, not a whole lot has changed. If you're an earlier, like venture-backed company or you're just getting started, that's a much bigger question, and we end up having to refer a lot of outside help to them to get their campaign off the ground.
Right. Makes sense. So unfortunately, I've only got time for one more question. Let's say I'm listening to this. I'm an IT pro, maybe I'm a CIO. I know my enterprise is starting to get into crowdfunding, and I'm going to need a more robust e-commerce platform. Whether I'm buying it from somebody else like you or one of your competitors, God forbid, or I'm building it myself, what are some of the things I need to make sure it can do and be ready to do before we dive into this?
Yeah, the most important thing is to see whether or not that platform supports non-inventory or delayed payment use cases like ars. There's not a whole lot out there as far as we know, so we're happy to help. But in addition to that, it's, you know, all the mechanisms around customer relationship management, CRM, or the frequency of backer updates or supporter updates through some kind of email or marketing automation system, or at least the integrations that the platform has to that. And then finally, all the mechanisms to handle things like bulk charging for all the backers that you aggregated up front and charge later, or bulk fulfillment, all those mechanisms. And if whether that platform offers real like white glove support and can say, hey, here are all these examples that we've seen. I mean, this industry is really new, so there's not a whole lot of players that have gone through successful campaigns. But yeah, finding the platform that comes with this added service layer that can support you if something, God forbid, goes wrong, or you just need kind of a flashlight into this new territory that you're unfamiliar with. Right. So I would say all those things are important with the platform that you pick.
Great. Sounds good. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. Before we go, can you just tell everybody who's listening where they can find Celery and where they can find you, maybe on Twitter or other social media accounts?
Yeah, absolutely. So our domain is www.trycelery.com, and folks can feel free to reach out to me directly. I'm Christopher@trycelery.com, and our Twitter handle for the company is @trycelery, and then mine direct line of the Twitter is @chriscy.
Sounds great. It also, I bet, gets a lot of extra traffic around Thanksgiving time. So thanks so much, Chris, for coming and talking crowdfunding with us. I had a great time. I hope everybody else did.
Great. Thanks a lot, David.
Sure. Unfortunately, we're out of time. So that leaves me to just thank our guest, Chris Tsai, CEO of Celery, for stopping by. And I want to thank you for listening. We could not and we would not do this without you. So we thank you for making it possible. We will have another great guest in 2 weeks' time. I'm 99% sure I know who that guest is, but I can't confirm her right now, but we're pretty sure she's on board, and I'm pretty sure she's going to say some things that make your blood boil and get you very excited. So please stop by in 2 more weeks for IT Life Radio. In the meantime, this is your IT Life, and the rest of us are just paying rent.